You know, it's kind of interesting as you're here this summer. A lot of you have good reason to be here. All of you think you have a good reason to be here, or you wouldn't be here. So the funny part is that you can really understand yourself, or you can lie to yourself. And that's an easy thing to do, to lie to yourself. As you're here, one of the things that's going to happen is if you do things right, there will be other people who will be positively affected by your behavior and by you being here. And you too will grow tremendously at the same time, because that's how it works. It works double. As you are where you belong, as you show people who Jesus is, then you begin to grow like crazy and you help them grow. And that's the process that you have to plug into all the time. And you're always thinking that, because if Jesus would summarize the Christianity, he'd say, it's about loving the Lord your God with all your heart and soul, mind, and loving each other as yourself. Now, if there are two things that you needed to focus on then this summer, it would be those two things. If you're not loving God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind this summer, you will never be used by God. You're not positioned to be used by him. So that's your choice. Loving others is looking at them and trying to figure out, what do I need to do to make you the best you can be? And everybody you see, you need to be asking that question about. Now, you do that, you're going to have a really powerful summer. You're going to be positioned so God will use you, and you will see at the end of the summer that your growth process was off the charts. Now, what's interesting is that you live in a nation where there's a lot of stuff that's going on. The people that come here and you yourselves that are here right now have had a lot of input before you even got here. One of the things that is prevalent in our nation right now is that people are saying that you can be smart and you can be good and you don't even have to believe in God. There's people that call themselves Christians all over the place, but we don't know what that means. In fact, in many ways, I've quit using the word Christian because I don't know what it means. And in order for us to use a word, we need to be able to define it. And in our country, that means you're not a Muslim or something. You see, really, the Bible calls us believers or followers or disciples. We're following Jesus. I just want to start with Psalm 14. It says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Interesting. It's not necessarily that a fool says in his mouth, there is no God. He says in his heart, there is no God. What's the difference there? Well, he may profess a God like Hitler did, but in his heart he doesn't believe in God. God has become an external thing. See, he says in his heart there's no God. They're corrupt. They do abominable deeds. There is none who does good. The Lord looks down from heaven on the children of man to see if there are any who understand who seek after him. And you know, as I read this, I thought, God, let this group be those people who understand and seek after you. I want you to be those people. Because God's looking down from heaven, looking for somebody who's doing that. And that's your choice. That's not anyone else's choice. That's your choice to do that. And that's what's interesting, is it's simpler than all of us make it out to be. I mean, understand who God is. Seek after God. Those are simple. Do that. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. Together. The word together there. In community they have become corrupt. But we talk a lot about community, and and community is very important. But because of the influence of community, you can either be godly or corrupt. A community that you're in can help you be corrupt as well. There is none who does good, not even one. Have they no knowledge of the evildoers who eat up people as they eat bread and do not call upon the Lord? See, there are people that live their lives every day and they do not even call upon the Lord. They're evil. Now, I don't know if you've called upon the Lord today. You've already eaten, I believe. There are people that today have eaten, but they haven't called upon the Lord for anything. Do they understand who the creator and sustainer of life even is? Do you understand that right now you're here and you have this chance and you're alive because the creator and sustainer of all the universe decides that you're here? Have they no knowledge of evildoers who eat up people, eat bread, and they do not call upon the Lord? They are in great terror, for God is with the generation of the righteous. For God is with the generation of the righteous, those who do what God would do. You would shame the plans of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. Oh, that salvation for Israel will come out of Zion. You know, it's interesting, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, thought that maybe their works and they made up their own thing, but salvation didn't come from their own thing. It would come from God. And they need to understand that. It's kind of interesting. I want to play a song for you. Every summer I have kind of a theme song and theme artist. The theme artist for me this summer is going to be Brandon Heath. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not. But he wrote a song called One Step Out of Eden or something. I forget what it's called. But it's the idea of, you know, God created us a certain way. Can you imagine being Adam and Eve and being created a certain way and having to leave that place the way you were created? The enjoyment that was supposed to be there for you? What a disaster. When I look at your lives, you're young. You have so much ahead of you. If you would choose to love God and walk with him, if you would do that, if you would choose, if you ever get married, to love guys loving their wives like Christ loved the church, and you wives making that husband of yours successful, and you could have a life that God actually intended you to have. But it seems like we keep getting one more step away from that. In the generations that we live, we get one more step away from eating, another step away from eating, another step, until we're so far away that we look at life and we go, man, is this what it's about? I mean, all of the abuse that goes on out there, all the people in other countries being sold for their bodies, all the objectivity that's happening with women, is that really what we're about? Is that what life should be about? Let me play a song for you. All right, nice song. I wish we could have concluded the song. It's basically a song, you can listen to it, I guess, on your own somewhere. It's basically a song that you got the gist of you can live without God. But what do you get out of it? See, there's a fruit of choosing to be godless. There's a fruit there. There's a fruit of choosing to be godly. There's a fruit there too. And our nation has decided to leave the Christian heritage that we've had to make sure that we're, as our president would say, not a Christian nation anymore. In fact, we've had leaders like our president call people who are blatantly against what God says and congratulate them and say, that's good for you. We are stepping away from what God intended for a people. And if we believe there are no consequences to that, then we're foolish. The song talks about leaving Eden, though, and going toward home. See, this is not a helpless situation. Those who actually live right and those who actually love God and walk with Him one day will be able to get out of the trouble we're in. But how do we live today is the question. Romans 10:2 has been a verse that I'm going to read every day this summer. It says, "For I bear them witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge." See, we have people that want to talk about God. If you, and throughout the summer, we're going to play some clips of our president talking about God. And if you want to be totally confused, listen to him talk about God. Because he makes God who he wants to be. You can talk about those in the Muslim faith in our nation today. And they will tell you that God and Allah are the same. They're not. They're vastly different. You see, we kind of don't, we almost have a zeal for God in our own way, but we make up who he is. See, that's not good. For being ignorant of the righteousness of God and seeking to establish their own, they did not submit to God's righteousness. See, it's easy for us to begin to set the standards and forget what God has said. I really equate us to the Titanic as a group. And the Titanic is kind of interesting. In fact, here's some facts about the Titanic. The ship was considered to have been so well constructed, it was believed that it could sustain any amount of damage and still stay afloat. They believed that this ship could literally take any damage that was thrown at its way, any problem, and still float. We know the history of that. The White Star Line billed the Titanic as unsinkable months before the ship ever embarked on her maiden voyage. Her construction was reputed to have been the best of the best. The people are on that ship, I guarantee you this, they had no thought of disaster. They had no thought of this thing crashing. None. Neighboring ships in the area had reported earlier in the evening that the waters ahead contained numerous masses of solid ice and that approaching ships should proceed with caution. The Titanic, however, thought to be unsinkable, powered full speed ahead. This proved to be a fatal mistake, as it's certainly one of the factors that led to the disaster. Nothing had been spared to ensure the comfort of the first class guests. The ship was even equipped with only 20 lifeboats, so that the precious deck space for the first class passengers would not be taken up by bulky lifeboats. We know what happened there. This isn't a good end. In many respects, you live in a country and you've grown up in a very prosperous time in this country. And almost everyone in America believes that we can party on. They do. They believe that you know, things will just straighten themselves out down the road. We'll be okay. We've been here before. The schools, they're somewhat broken, and the government is broken, and the churches are broken, we know all that, but we're just going to keep going forward, full speed. No, there's going to come a time where there's a day of reckoning for that kind of thought process. Now, when that is, I don't know, but you can't live in a nation like ours that is going godless. The major influences on our nation are really the president, believe it or not, Oprah, and I forget who the others were in there. And both of them are strong proponents that we are not a Christian nation, that we are not necessarily need to follow God. Especially Oprah. Well, that's interesting. I think that for us to be the best that we can be, what we need to do is understand that, that very possibly our nation is headed towards something that is going to be very difficult to turn around from. And what we do as believers is not fret about that. We don't worry about that. We know who's in charge of the future. See, we're another step away from Eden. There's no doubt about that. But we also know where we're going. See, we actually can offer hope. We can actually offer something to somebody. This is why it's so important for Christians to be holy or unique, different. Because we need to be able to offer those who have no hope something. And as we do that, we can give them a reason for living today and a reason to be excited about the hope that they could have tomorrow. Because there isn't one there otherwise. And if you don't have that, what you do is you live for yourself. I mean, I don't even understand the mentality. How is it that there's a whole industry taking little girls and little boys from other countries and taking them to this country and having adults abuse them and think that that's fun? How do you get there mentally? See, we live in a country that does that. How do you get there, though? See, those people have no hope. There's no hope for a good future in that situation. I think that the United States is very much like the Titanic, and this summer I am hoping that you, as a crew here in the shipwreck theme, can continue to think about what we need to do to prepare for that day to help people. And the number one thing that you need to do is make sure that your walk with God is what it should be. That you understand your Heavenly Father, that you are intimate with Him, and that you love the people that you see. Because when disaster comes, the light needs to be bright. And I'm not saying if it comes. You cannot keep the ship on the course it's on now and not see disaster down the road. You can't. There must be something to alter that course, or we're in trouble. And yeah, you could say, Dave, that's not too encouraging. We're young people are starting our lives and that kind of thing. Yeah, well, I'm sorry. My generation blew it. But we need to raise leaders now for what's coming on and not pretending that it's not there. We can't stay playing music on the deck of the Titanic while it goes down and pretend it's not going down. It will. Life is an abundance of what could have been when you look at it. I mean, you think about it. It could have been different for Adam and Eve, right? It could have been different. It wasn't. Eve listened to Satan. She made the choices. She had the choice. She made the choices she did. Adam went right with it. And what are the consequences of that? See, things, it's easy for us to try and speculate and play games and say, what could have been different? How about the people in Noah's day? Things could have been different for them. I mean, how long did it take Noah to build that boat? And boy, they could have joined him in that boat. But they didn't for some reason. So things could have been different for them, but it wasn't. Things could have been different for the children of Israel who wandered for 40 years and died in the desert because God wanted to give them something, but they wouldn't take it. Why wouldn't they take it? They're afraid. They looked at the human level. They looked at God's going, look, I want you to have a good life. I want you to have. See, it's not that God doesn't want you to enjoy this world. He does, but you can't enjoy it without Him. King Saul, what could have been if he would have loved God and walked with Him for his family instead of the way it was? See, in your life and in my life, the decisions we make change the what could have been. Things could have been different with Adam and Eve. The people, one person during Noah's day, you think one would get on that boat. And it could have changed everything for that one. The promised land, I don't know how many. Steve, Arish, you remember how many people had to die in those 40 years? Just estimate, you know? I heard estimates, I don't remember. It's in the millions that had to die in those 40 years. But you just take the number and divide it by 40 years and the days in there, and you'll know how many funerals a day took place, average, for those younger people, your generation. See, what your generation got to see in that day was my generation getting killed off by God because we refused to listen. Now, here's the hope in that story, though. Your generation in that story got to get that promised land. Only they didn't learn the lesson, because when they got there, they still intermixed and did the things they shouldn't have done. Or could have been. The decisions that you will make in life Some of them are lethal decisions. They really are. You make a decision, you can't turn back from it. A lot of times we'd like to believe that that doesn't take place, but it does. There are certain decisions, if you make them, there's no way out of it. There are some that are less than lethal. I mean, if you eat, you know, food with hydrogenation in it and stuff, I guess you're not going to die that moment or anything. It might not be a good choice, but it's not necessarily going to kill you immediately. I keep using the example of a guy I talked to once that decided to run and have an affair and leave his wife and move in with somebody else and marry her and have kids with her, and then came back to me one day and said, I think I made a mistake. I got to make this all right. And I'm like, good luck. I mean, I understand you want to make it right, and we can, you can talk to God, you can talk to your former wife, but what do you do now? You've made some decisions where now you have two families, and boy, that's tough. However you do that, that's tough. God still loves you. Yes, you can still be used by God, I believe, but you want to fix that situation right now? That's tough. I don't know that you can. See, on your side of the fence, what you have to understand is that the decisions in your life, they add up, and some of the decisions that you make could be lethal. Some of them are slower than others, like hydrogenated food. It just will help clog your arteries one day, and then you'll fall over dead immediately someday, but it wasn't a surprise because of all the stuff that was clogging your arteries. You went to B-dubs too much. There are also good... Not now. The boy's a sick boy. There are good decisions, too, you'll make. I'm not even looking, you know, obviously I pray that you don't make any lethal decisions, that you don't do something that you can't turn around from. You know, there are just some things in life that are that deadly. I'm certainly hoping you don't make the less than lethal decisions where it's kind of like a slow death kind of thing, too. Good decisions are better than those two choices, certainly. But I was hoping this summer that you'd get in the habit of making great decisions. In other words, you're very discerning, and instead of living a life of just normalcy, you're living a life that God would actually bless. And to live a life that God would bless, you live a certain way. You're a clean vessel. You're living where you love God and you love others. You're going to be entrusted this summer. Entrusted with a lot of things. Some of you are entrusted with areas. Entrusted with children. Entrusted with making sure the gospel is communicated well. Entrusted. You are entrusted. An entrusted person is someone assigned the responsibility for doing something to someone. Put in someone's care or protection. 1 Corinthians 4:1 says, this is how one should regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Servants of Christ. I love it. Reminds me of Elijah when he was standing on Mount Carmel. And he looked at those people and he said, today you will know that God's God. In essence, today is the day you will know because God's going to strike. And then he said, I want you to know who God is. And when you think of me, I want you to see me as his servant. So if somebody says anything about you this summer, they should understand that you are somebody who understands that you've been entrusted with the good of somebody else. You have been entrusted with the message of God. You have been entrusted with being a person who is to be the light to the people who come on these grounds. You have been entrusted. What that means is that probably throughout the summer, you're going to have people say things and do things that maybe you'll understand they shouldn't be saying or shouldn't be doing, and you're going to have a choice. But you have to understand, you've been entrusted. You heard that for a reason. And when you hear something that is not right and you see something that's not right, remember, you're entrusted. You are the one that should stand up and actually do something about that. One of my favorite phrases in my head, at least, is, I wish I didn't know that. I mean, somebody says something, do something, I see it, and I go, I wish I didn't know that. Why? Because now I got to do something with that. Why? Because I am entrusted. I am entrusted with the gospel. I am entrusted with leadership. I am entrusted with the good of somebody else. And when you are entrusted, you have to act like one who is entrusted. In 1 Timothy is where I really wanted to get to. I just want to focus on a couple concepts. Paul was talking to young Timothy. And since I'm getting older, I could be the older guy talking to you young Timothy's. As I urged you when I was going to Macedonia, remain at Ephesus so that you may charge certain persons not to teach any different doctrine, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies which promote speculation rather than stewardship from God, that is, by faith. One of the things that Paul talked to Timothy about was being entrusted, being a guardian. Timothy, I want you to guard the truth, man. You that are here, especially those who have gone through MBI, you understand the truth. You guard that. You know, what happens is people start getting off into tangents, and they love to argue about all kinds of things. Kind of like the Pharisees. You know, Jesus heals a guy on the Sabbath, and they start yelling at him for working on the Sabbath. You know what I mean? Let's make that the issue. They didn't understand the Sabbath. Jesus was going through a grain field, grabbing grain and putting it, you know, rubbing it and putting it in his mouth. He got accused of harvesting on the Sabbath. See, we can do that as Christians. We can get off on all these really weird, strange tangents if we want. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm asking you to stay away from that. There are some things that are very important that we need to stay in focus. And remember, we're stepping further and further away from Eden. Satan is luring us further and further. And the fruit of that is going to be disaster. And the fruit is disaster already in many lives and many families and many individuals. The fruit's already there. You need to be people who understand the truth. And if you don't understand it, you need to get back into the Bible and you need to get it regularly and you need to defend what the truth is. You don't need to defend God. He can take care of himself. But our nation, we need to understand what the truth is and defend it. The aim of our charge, and this is interesting because as Paul talks to Timothy, he says there's three things, man. The aim of our charge is very simple, is love that issues from a pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. If there's three goals I want you to focus on this summer, it's those three. Love that issues from a pure heart. What is that? See, most of us will do right things in life not because we care about somebody else, but because it's best for our hide. We figure, this is best for me right here. I need to do this because this is best for me, so I'm going to do this. Now, that in itself is not necessarily evil. You know, it can be, but it's not necessarily. However, love from a pure heart is very simple. It's an agape love. It's really when you get in the habit, and I want you in this habit. Somebody walks on these grounds, the very first thing you do is look in their eyes. And you ask God very quickly, what do I need to do to help this person be who they should be? And ask that question before you even talk to them. And then greet them and talk to them and let God lead you and look, what are you doing? You're actually thinking of them, not yourself. See, there are all kinds of things. And sometimes after being here all these years in summer, it gets interesting. I can almost predict the flow of what's going to happen as far as attitude. And not because I want it that way, it's just you've been around long enough, so it's like drinking water, you know what that feels like. Towards the end of summer, see what happens is, a lot of times we want someone to counsel or do something, they go, you know, you don't understand, I got my friends here, I need to, see, this is about me right now. It's no longer about these kids. It's really not about them anymore, it's about me. That's a very dangerous place to be. I don't care in life. When you get to the point where what's best is trumped by what you want for you, look out. The aim of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart. In other words, you're so concerned with the will of God and you're so concerned for the good of others that that's what consumes you, those two things. Not your time, not your rest, not your comfort, but you're consumed by a heart that is in love with God and in love with people. And you protect your conscience. I think this is the hardest thing for your generation. Actually, I think that's what Satan works on the most is your conscience. You know, he certainly works on messing up the idea of love. There's no doubt there. But your conscience. See, your conscience is, in essence, the spirit trying to grab a hold of your heart, and you're not hearing it anymore. So when you do things. Sorry for the old illustrations, but go and watch somebody playing a video game where they're blowing people away and there's blood flying all over the place and there's people cheering. And see, they're already hard to all that blood flying and guns. They're already hard to that. So when I don't normally do that, so I don't have a hard conscience to that. So if I walk in and see him do that, I go, ugh, I'm leaving. This doesn't even look good. See, what happens over time for any of us is that we get so used to doing some of the acceptable evils in our lives that we no longer even have a conscience anymore towards those things. It's really hard for God to convict us on certain things because we're not there to be convicted. We don't care anymore. We, in fact, have come to the point where we have listened to the line, the syncretism, I heard it phrased the other day differently, the eclectic belief system that we have. We like to believe this and this and this and put it together. We don't realize that 90% truth and 10% error is still terror. We don't want 100% truth. And then a sincere faith. Where does a sincere faith come from? Well, it's people who actually know God. Yeah, I promise you this. If you really know God, you'll listen to him. If you really know God, you'll trust him. See, that's why we work on the Bible side so much. Because you need to know God. Because if you knew him, you would act a certain way. The stuff that would break his heart would break your heart. Why? Because you would understand why it breaks his heart. You see, God wants families in this world. God doesn't want little children sold into sex slavery. He doesn't want that. He wants families where husbands love their wives like Christ loved the church, where wives enjoy the whole motherhood and being a part of training children and rearing them and making their husband as successful as he can be and be a partner with him as they were created to be a partner. See, God loves when those things work right because he made them, and they're really good when they work. But for some reason, we keep pushing against that. We don't want to live within that. See, a sincere faith is one that says, God, you're God, I'm Dave, and you love me, and you do right all the time, so I'm going to listen to you. Now, what I would suggest is that Satan is going to try and stop you from these three things. He's going to try and get you to mask them, so you don't even know that you need to work on it. He's going to get you to mask love that issues from a pure heart. No, that's love. You did all these for other people while you're patting yourself on the back and making sure you get the credit, all that stuff. I tell you what, if you love because you just gain from it and you are self-centered anyway, the problem is your self-centeredness, and that's what you need to deal with. You should do right no matter what. No matter what the motive is, you should do right. But if your motive's not right, you need to correct that so that you can actually enjoy what you do. Verse 6 says, certain persons, by swerving from these, have wandered away into vain discussions. I entrust you, Timothy, my child, in accordance with the prophecies previously made about you, that by them you may wage the good warfare. It's interesting when you look at warfare, it's not just taking ground, it's holding ground. The connotation there is both. You know, we can say it's important that we give the gospel, and people, that's right. It's also important that once they become a believer that we hold the ground. That's the connotation here. When I played football, there were two things you did. You had to move forward, and you also had to never move backward. See, those are the two things. The worst thing would be to move backwards. So if you can't move forward, don't give an inch. Because the next play, we're still trying to go forward. And so, you know, we practiced a lot. We not only practiced moving forward, but in my position, I practiced, you're not moving me. That's a skill, believe it or not. We learned how to set our body up so that big guys, I mean really big guys, could run full speed at you and they fell over instead of you. I mean, you could look at them and say, boy, they're giants. I could never do this. No, there's a way for you to hold your ground. There is. Oh, I'm not saying that after you've done that, your head isn't spinning a little bit or that they didn't really hit you hard or it's a whole lot of fun. But holding ground is critical. Some of you each summer have experienced that, or at camp you've come to a place and you've learned something. You begin to say, I've got to make decisions. And then you go away and those decisions you think you had made are all lost somehow. See, you didn't hold the ground. And you come back and you take that ground back again. You go, this time I'm going to do it. And then you leave again and you don't hold the ground. See, there's a skill in holding the ground that's as important as gaining the ground. And that's important to see. And what Paul was saying, I entrust you, Timothy. Timothy was going to be entrusted. The old guard here is entrusting you this summer with a job. Timothy, my child, in accordance with the prophecies, I believe, that each of you are here by design, that you're not here by mistake. I believe God wants to use you here, and that he wants to help you grow here. And what Paul is telling Timothy, look, Timothy, you coming into my life is not a mistake. This is right. The prophecies made about you, by them you may wage a good warfare by holding what? Faith and a good conscience. Timothy, pay attention. This is how you win this thing. You hold on to your faith and you hold on to that good conscience. Yes, I might be the media Nazi because I understand the importance of a good conscience. You let stuff in your head that shouldn't be there. You let gossip in your brain that shouldn't be there. You let scenes from a movie in your brain that shouldn't be there. You let words that shouldn't be there. You are slowly eroding your conscience. And you will not be able to fight that good fight because you will not be strong enough. Yeah, but that's a really radical commitment. You're right. It is. And that's what we're asking you to have, is a radical commitment, not a nominal commitment, not a sort of Christianity, not a kind of Christian, not an almost Christian commitment, but a real one. You see, by holding faith and a good conscience, by knowing God and holding on to what you know, and by not violating that conscience, by rejecting this, some have made shipwreck of their faith. The Titanic. See, some are busy enjoying the moment. Their consciences, well, it won't happen to me. The United States, we'll be fine. We've got the best court system in the world. We've got a really strong economy. We lead the world. We have the most bombers of anybody in the world. We have a lot of nuclear weapons. Nothing will happen to us. We have built a country and a nation and a place that even if it gets wounded, it won't go down. Don't worry. We're okay. Really. That if the nation does get shipwrecked, you don't need to be shipwrecked in it. You can be the lifeboat. See, I'm not sure that we have enough lifeboats out there, but when the day comes where there's trouble for this nation, those of us that have been walking with God and love God need to be the lifeboats. And we need to have a lot of them because there's going to be a lot of people that need to get in. See, during a disaster, people do run towards the only hope that they can find. On the Titanic, the only hope that they could find was the lifeboats. I want you to be that lifeboat. Oh, you may not be needed right now, but see, the tendency then is to let the lifeboat just sit there and rust, can't get it off the deck because it's... No, you be ready. You be practicing. You be ready for the day when God wants you to step up to the plate. You be ready. Kind of like when I played football, one of the things that our coaches told us is everybody that is not playing on that field, you better be ready to play on that field. And what he meant by that was very simple. If I call your number, you need to know what we're doing, what the play was that was called in, etc. You do not go in there in a cloud. Everybody on the sidelines, so when I wasn't playing, I was watching the plays that got called in, and I was walking along the sidelines, and I was waiting, because if my number got called, I needed to know exactly what was going on. Did my number get called every game? No. So after a while, you know what the tendency is? Start talking with your buddies and forgetting what's going on, and you know, again, is that evil? No, it's, you know, normal, probably. You're just waiting, and no one calls your number. I've seen guys stand on the sidelines and their number was called and they never heard it. You know what the coach did? He just called a different number. And they heard it. And when the other guy went in, I remember the one guy said, hey! And the coach just went by and hit him in the chest, said, pay attention. Whoa. His time came. His opportunity came, but he wasn't paying attention. So he didn't get it. I don't want your faith to be shipwrecked. And I look down the road and there are people who have been in this group, not this year, but who are older now that have married and they've been divorced. There are people who have been in this group that are not walking with God anymore. There are people in this group that have sat here through the years that have rejected some of the things in life that they've learned here, and their faith was not upheld, and their consciences slowly were eroded, and their lives are shipwrecked today. I don't want you to be in that group. And really, when you look at the Bible, it's pretty simple. This isn't that hard to get. I mean, it's not hard to grasp this idea. What I want you to do this summer is pretty simple. I'm going to play the song, and you're probably all familiar with it. I don't want you to sing it, but let's see if Brandon Heath can finish it. The funny part is I played those things. I got here an hour early and played that thing about five times through, and it played fine. So I'm not sure why it quit on us there. But I want to play the song, It Is Well With My Soul, to you, because one of the things you can do in life is ask certain questions that help you understand life. How do you get to the point where you could write these words and mean them? That's the question. I told you about the Titanic. There's another ship that I can't pronounce on there, the Villa de whatever. Whatever the name is. On that ship, there was Anna Spafford and her children. And they got hit by another ship, and it sunk, and she lost all her kids. Her husband had sent them out earlier, and I have the story written out for you. And he got a telegraph message that she was alive, but all the rest was lost. In other words, all the kids are gone. He wrote the song, It Is Well With My Soul. When he was passing over that spot where they died, because he was on another ship, he penned these words. What will it take to get you to where you could actually pen words like this during the most horrific time in your life? See, if it's going to be well with your soul then, it needs to be well with your soul now. Being well with your soul then does not come all of a sudden. It doesn't come from those whose consciences are seared. It doesn't come from those who haven't had genuine faith. It's not something that's just going to happen all of a sudden. It happens because your soul is well now. What's going to happen at the end of the summer, the last time I speak to support staff will be on July 31st. We're going to sing that song. And if you have worked it out throughout the summer where you have read those words and you have positioned yourself so you honestly believe that you can say those words, then you sing it on that day with us. If not, be quiet. No judgment. Just get there one day, would you? So I want you to ask. I'm going to give you this. It will have the words on it, a little story of how it came to be. And I want you to read the words often. And say, can I really say those things? If everything about my life, if everybody that's really important to me in life had a disaster, if everything in my life turned to what I would consider a disaster, could I write this? If not, why not? See, those are good questions to ask. And what do I need to do then to get there where I could do that? What do I need to do so that I could actually mean this song? Because there was one who had a soul that was okay, even though disaster happened around them. See, the cool thing about Christian life is no matter what you do to somebody who really knows God, you cannot steal their joy. You cannot steal their soul. I'm not saying that he was thrilled that his children died. If you don't understand joy, if that's what you think I said. but you will not be able to rob this man of his joy because it came from God.
Is nailed to the cross.
For some reason, Brandon, he took a little artistic license on that song. And that's fine, but he did skip one verse, so I want to read it to you, and you will have it on your seat. It's the second verse. It says, though Satan should buffet, though trials should come, let this blessed assurance control, that Christ has regarded my helpless estate and has shed his own blood for my soul. Horatio understood something. I want you to understand it. This summer, I want you to understand. That's my prayer for you, that your soul will be okay. And I know it takes some explanation to understand what I mean by that, but what I mean is this, that you have faith in a God who loves you, that you guard your conscience against what the evil one is trying to do to you, that you have love from a genuine heart. It's really just three things we're asking of you this summer. And I really do want you to focus on those three things. When I talk to people, so often they focused on their business and their money and their future and their job and their... But the question is, how's your soul? That's the question. The other stuff's okay, but how's your soul? Will my soul be okay if... No. Soul needs to be okay no matter. See, that's the difference. Not if. Otherwise, you'll never be able to write this. Or you're never able to sing that, really. I do want you to sing this at the end of the summer, I do. But I don't want you to sing it if you can't mean it, that it's well with your soul. Some of you have some things to work through. That's okay. You might even feel like, well, God can't use me because I've got issues. Yeah, Peter did too. And what God told Peter was, go feed my sheep. It's not about you, Peter. It's about me. Make this summer about God. Make it about him, not your failures, not your mistakes. Don't make it about that. Make it about God. Make it about his grace. Make it about his mercy. Make it about you emerging as a leader. Make it about you having a whole soul. And see what happens in your life. Make it about preparing for the time where our nation will need lifeboats. And you will be the captain of one. Make it about that time. And then see if God doesn't use this group, not only in great ways this summer, but in great ways throughout the history that we have, that only he knows that we have, coming up. It is soon that your generation will take the baton of leadership in almost every area. Be prepared to be the one who grabs it. And have your soul be set on where it should be set. Love God with all your heart and all your mind, all your soul. If you're not doing that, please stop everything else and do that first. Then love others. Make sure your soul is at peace with God. Father, thank you for this summer. We thank you for this group. I pray that you will work in a very mighty way in each of their lives, that you will demonstrate your holiness, your grace, your mercy, that you allow us many opportunities to be a light in darkness. That you will convict if those that are here have consciences that are already seared in certain areas, that you will unsear them for a while so that they can see the areas in life that they need to correct so that they can be okay with their soul. Father, we do know that the tragedy that took place with this writing of this song and Horatio and his family. But God, even there, we are using the tragedy that he experienced so many years ago today in this room to talk about your goodness. May it always be that we understand your love and your grace and your mercy and your purposes. May this be a great summer, not because of necessarily numbers or because of fun, even though those things are fine, but because our souls find rest in you and we are prepared for whatever comes in the future. In Jesus' name, amen. When you leave, there's a stack of these up here, and it's just a song and the, never mind, he'll pass them out right now. Right. And it has the song on the front and then the story of how the song was written there. Please put it somewhere where you have to look at it once in a while. Because I do, on the 31st, want you to sing that song and mean it. Thank you.